to do. I'm sure we'll get through it. We're reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 3, entitled Hiranyakashipu's Plan to Become Immortal, text number 33. Vyaktam vibhostulam idam sarinam. I'll try that again. Vyaktam vibhostulam idam sarinam. Yanendriya pranamanu gunam stvam. Bhunkshe stithu dhamani paramestye. Avyakta atma purusha purana. Vyaktam vibhostulam idam sariram. Yenendriya pranamano gunam stvam. Bhunkshe stithu dhamani paramestye. Avyakta atma purusha purana. Vyaktam vibhostulam idam sariram. Yanendriya pranamano gunam stvam. Bhunkshesti dutamani paramestye. Avyakta atma purusha purana. Yaktam vibhostulam idam sariram. Yanendriya pranamano gunam stvam. Bhunkshe stithu dhamani paramestye. Vyaktam, manifested. Vipo, O my Lord. Stulam, cosmic manifestation. Idam, this. Shariram, external body. Yena, by which. Indriya, the senses. Prana, the life air. Manaha, the mind. Gunan, transcendental qualities. Tvam, you. Bhunkshe, enjoy. Stitaha, situated. Dhamani, in your own abode. Parameshche, the supreme. Avyaktaha, not manifested through ordinary knowledge. Atma, the soul. Purushaha, the supreme person. Puranaha, the oldest. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada Ki. O my Lord, being changelessly situated in your own abode, you expand your universal form within this cosmic manifestation, thus appearing to taste the material world. You are Brahman, the super soul, the oldest, the personality of Godhead. It is said that the absolute truth appears in three features, namely impersonal Brahman, localized super soul, and ultimately the supreme personality of Godhead, Krishna. The cosmic manifestation is the gross material body of the supreme personality of Godhead, who enjoys the taste of the material mellows by expanding his parts and parcels, the living entities who are qualitatively one with him. The supreme personality of Godhead, however, is situated in the Vaikuntha planets where he enjoys the spiritual mellows. Therefore, the one absolute truth, Bhagavan, pervades all by his material cosmic manifestation, the spiritual Brahman effulgence, and his personal existence as the supreme Lord. Om Agyanachi Mirandasya Janandanashalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stabitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapatantikam Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhye Vacha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namona Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. So the Supreme Absolute Truth exists in three features: the impersonal effulgence, the Brahman feature, the localized aspect, the super soul, and the Supreme Person, Bhagavan, Sri Krishna. And depending on our realization of the Supreme Truth, we will deal accordingly. So for us as devotees, we are not really interested in anything except actually the Bhagavan feature, which is fine because the Bhagavan feature includes all the other stuff, so to speak. Everything else emanates from the personality, and so if we are just surrendered to and taking shelter of the Supreme Person, then everything goes on nicely. We don't have to actually worry about external things. We see in the story here of Hiranyakashipu, if we kind of follow his life, he's kind of always fried out. Even at the point where the planets are changing their orbit and he's controlling and the fire is coming out, the demigods are relocating and stuff like that, you would say from a career point of view, from like a material career point of view, you're doing pretty good, right? So many people, they would like to have their own business, have a lot of money. Changing the course of the planets usually don't fit into their kind of ambition of what material life is supposed to be. So comparatively speaking, we would say Hiranyakashipu is successful. And yet, he's completely fried out at all times. Why is that? Well, because he's taking it upon himself to control the circumstances, to control the environment that he is taking part in. Now, that's a problem, because we are not, factually speaking, controllers. So it doesn't matter how much or how little we control, there will always be a lot of stuff going on around us that we're not controlling, and that will be a source of worry. Now in Hiranyakashipu's case, it's almost it's humorous that it's his own son, his 5-year-old son, that he has no control over. He can control the demigods, he can control the planets, he can control the universe, basically, but his own 5-year-old son is out of control. So that would be a source of great, I mean, most of you are parents and know how that feels, so imagine that, you know. So this is a great source of worry and frustration for Hiranyakashipu. So much so that he ends up, you know, trying to kill his own son. So this is the problem with material life, and this is the problem not having taken shelter of the Bhagavan feature of the Lord, is that you are, to a certain extent, considering yourself as controller, right? So in the, I mean, the Brahman feature, of course, we usually use the example of impersonal liberation, this idea that, no, I want to liberate myself. I want to not be a karmi. I want to not be under the control of the modes. This is a natural response to being under the control of the modes, because there is suffering. The modes are not nice, they're not nice, they're just the modes. So if we're attached to a certain combination of modes, there will be suffering. So how do we get out of that? We get out of the modes. So that liberation concept is a natural idea from a material perspective of happiness, right? All the suffering comes from material engagements. And if they are not there, if I'm not materially engaged, that means the suffering is gone, I will be happy. Two things are a problem here, of course, that if everything disappears, that is slightly boring in the long run. You know, there is nothing there, you're just kind of floating there. It's described in Brihad Bhagavatamrita how the Mahakalapura is described, is actually the Brahman effulgence, where all the souls go who seek liberation, and they kind of merge into Brahman, but they don't merge. That's the point, they're still there. The example is given of a green bird in a green tree. Even Mayavadis use this example to see, like, you merge with the tree. But you take a green bird in a green tree, the bird doesn't disappear just because we can't distinguish it. So in the same way, merging into the Brahman effulgence doesn't mean we go away as spirit souls. We're still there. And we still are alive, and the soul is still active. So when it's put into that situation, it will be frustrated. In the end, it will come back into the material realm simply for want of activity. If you're hanging there, you don't have any activity, by nature you are active because you're alive, then you will go back to something you are familiar with. You're not familiar with the spiritual realm, so it will be back to the material realm. So technically, liberation as a goal is not liberated. Does that make sense? You're not actually liberated. It's a temporary state of no suffering. But it's not actually liberation, because that, it's called the Karana Sharia, the original polluted consciousness of me being in control has not been properly dealt with. It's called Stula Sharia, the gross material body is gone, the Linga Sharia, the subtle body is pacified, but that original cause of the material body and the material consciousness has not been properly dealt with, because you're still putting yourself as the controller. So that doesn't work. So what we could call super soul realization, not a term we are much familiar with, it's not something we hear a lot, it could be said to be a little better, because now we have an acceptance that the Supreme actually is a functioning entity. Does that make sense? It's not just white light or no qualities or what these impersonalists are saying, but there's actually something going on. There is actually a certain way the material energy and energy as such functions, therefore there must be a localized aspect. Now this is great, but it's not very great, because still we don't know if has the idea of me being the controller and enjoyer, has that actually been taken care of? If you go to God, in order to get something. You know how things work, and then you can get, you acknowledge his existence, but like Prabhupada said, you go to church and you pray, God, give me today my daily bread. That is not love of God, that is love of bread, right? So what's actually the relationship? Is God your order supplier? Is it just that you go to him and then when you get what you want, you go back, you know? There was recently in Gurukul class, we had an example coming up of a minister. And by the way, if any one of you know this story, I would like to get more details. The story is that he was a Christian minister, and he was having these Christian people coming in and confessing week after week. And it was the same things they were confessing week after week. And he was thinking, this doesn't seem to be working very well, because you come in, you confess, and you go out, and then you do exactly the same things that you just confessed to, and you go back and confess, and it just goes around and round and round. So again, we're not actually getting out. It's still this samsara loop, right? What he so then did was somehow he got in contact with the devotees and he started chanting Hare Krishna. And apparently he continued his function as a minister, but now in a more devotional mood. So if anyone knows that story, please see me after class. The point still being that if you're acknowledging the localized aspect, but not developing that submissive love of that person behind the localized aspect, then we're not really getting much further. We're still putting ourselves in the center. It's still about my needs. So that's why the only thing we accept here as devotees is the Bhagavan aspect of the Lord. That no, we put Krishna as a person first, and then everything else, all the purification, all the regulation, all the sadhana and the philosophy and all these things, they come from that, right? Sometimes we hear that we should purify ourselves in order to do service, but it's the other way around. Doing service will purify us. So there is no such thing as this atonement. It exists merely so everybody else feels satisfied, right? That there should be justice. You know, why am I following the laws and this guy over here is not following the laws and there are no repercussions, why no consequences, why should I follow the laws? It is actually stemming from our own ignorance, because the laws are there because they're coming from God. So there is no happy criminal. Does that make sense? You never get away with not following the laws. The question is, when does the reaction come? As we can see, Hiranyakashipu here, he was able to push it pretty far. And you could say from like a judicial point of view, as a good citizen of the material world, what's happening with this guy? Why is he allowed to do all these things that apparently are not bona fide? And I'm sitting here, I'm doing my work, I get up every morning, what do I get? But, and we can see, of course, that in the end, it didn't work out for Hiranyakashipu. So the point being, if we understand that the rules are there only for us to develop our relationship with Krishna, from which all happiness is derived, then there will be no problem following the rules. It's like you're standing in front of a suitcase filled with money. Now, are you going to complain that you have to bow down to get it? Not really, right? So do we have to complain about, oh, I have to get up early, I have to chant my rounds, I have to be vegetarian, I can't even go to McDonald's, you know, in order to get love of God? You know, no, that's not the proper, that would be ignorance, right? If you understand a little bit about what it actually is we're approaching, then it's not a problem. And that's what you see with those devotees who are, we would call advanced, who are advancing. They're not thinking about justice. Is it fair? Am I doing more than I need to do? Is someone else doing more than I should be doing? No, we're doing it because it's a privilege. Devotional service is a privilege. And the more we're able to look at it as a privilege, the more it'll pay us back. The more we will experience that rasa. Why? Because that's what pleases Krishna. If someone comes and serves you, but doesn't look at you and has a body language of clearly he doesn't really want to do it, you're not going to be very pleased with that service. But if someone comes genuinely humble and happy to serve you, the reciprocation will be so much more. So Krishna is a person. It's exactly the same when we're doing our devotional service. If we do it with enthusiasm, with humility, with love and compassion, that reciprocation will be so much more. So there's no need for this attachment to justice. Attachment to justice comes actually from a state of mind of extended sense gratification. It's the business mindset. I cannot do business if there's no justice. If I make a nice trade and someone comes and grabs my stuff, why? It's not going to work out. So it's actually coming from our conditioning, from our Western mentality where we come from. It's completely natural. This is our conditioning, so that's there. But if we can pinpoint it when it comes up and understand that it's actually not beneficial, that if you want to purify someone, devotional service is the only way, right? There is no prayaschitta. There is no atonement that's going to make you Krishna conscious, because the atonement may take away the sinful reaction, but it doesn't take away the seed of wanting to do it again. That habit that we get into, whatever we do becomes a habit. If we chant Hare Krishna, that becomes a habit. If we eat vegetarian, that becomes a habit. If we blaspheme devotees, it becomes a habit. It doesn't matter. We become addicted to anything we do. It's not just drugs and sex and gambling and these things. Anything positive we do, we become addicted to it. So the atonement doesn't deal with that. If we atone, we may get rid of the heavy, gross reaction of going to hellish planets or something like that, but the idea will come up again. We see so many times that, famous people, what are they famous for? One thing is they're famous for being famous. They're also famous for being either on drugs or in rehab, right? They're kind of going back and forth, many of them at least. There are exceptions, but they're, so they go to rehab, they get cured, and they go out again, and what happens? The seed is still there, so they just go back into the same thing. So only devotional service can actually change the way we function, can remove these seeds of aparad, of philosophical deviation, whatnot, laziness. These things are only taken care of by devotional service. So if we do some nonsense, the cure is devotional service, always. You know, get engaged in something that we like. Because we're not completely pure devotees at this point, we would want to be engaged in something that kind of suits our conditioning. I'm sitting here, I wasn't supposed to give this class. Others would be more uncomfortable getting up here without preparation. But for me, if someone asked me to do the afternoon Harinam without any preparation, they would be very uncomfortable for me, because that's just not my conditioning, you know. It's just it doesn't feel like my identity. In fact, it's just my conditioning, but nevertheless, we have certain services that we just feel more comfortable doing. That's why we say fan the spark. Where is the spark? What gets you fired up? What do you think is interesting? Do that and fan that spark like anything. Then it'll spread, and as time goes by, more and more services will be nice for us to perform. But initially, we just find whatever it is we think we can do, and do that. That is how we become a pure devotee. It's by enthusiasm, it's by engaging in devotional service. So there are no material circumstances that will actually bring us closer. It's just a matter of engaging in the process. In order to do that, we have to at least theoretically acknowledge that everything is for Krishna. That's the problem of Hiranyakashipu. He's got all the secondary down. He's from a Vedic viewpoint pious. He knows the Shastra. He discusses Vedanta. He understands everything. But that Karna Sharir, that initial polluted consciousness, is very, very strong. He has not dealt with that. And that's why all of these secondaries are null and void. And they just lead him towards his own doom. So if we start by changing that, then we don't need all these secondaries that Hiranyakashipu has. We don't need to change the orbits of the planets. It's not really necessary to become a devotee. We just change that initial consciousness that we're doing it for Krishna rather than ourselves. Initially, we'll do what we like to do, but as time goes, we will expand and be able to do more and more just what is needed, because that mercy comes from Krishna. So that's devotional service. Time went quick today because there was a little confusion, so I'll end here. A couple of questions if anyone has anything. Yes, Mataji? Yes. Microphone, probably?
Class.
Hare Krishna. Thank you.
I noticed when I was reading the verse today is that in the translation it says that the Lord appears to be enjoying the material nature, and then in the purport it says he enjoys that, expanding that material. I don't have the book here, but
no, I happen to have the book here. Yes, it says, expand your universal form within this cosmic manifestation, thus appearing to taste the material world. Now, taste the material world means that you're actually interacting with it. You're having a material experience, which is not the case because it's indirect. So, it says here, however, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, however, is situated in the Vaikuntha planets where he enjoys the spiritual mellows. Right? Oh, here. Okay. The cosmic manifestation is the gross material body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who enjoys the taste of the material mellows by expanding his parts and parcels, the living entities who are qualitatively one with him. So he does it indirectly. He does it by expanding his parts and parcels. So it's not actually him as Bhagavan, right? He experiences it through us by expanding his part and parcels, the living entities who are qualitatively one with him. So we are enjoying the material mellows. Now he happens to be enjoying us, whether or not we are actually enjoying or not. Because he likes us, we're vibhuti, we're the ornaments of the Lord, but he doesn't deal with the material energy. That's what the definition of the material energy is, that place where he's not actually as a person present. Does that make sense? So he allows for us to wallow in this kind of nook and corner of the manifestation, and that he enjoys. It's like your kid is outside and playing in the mud. It's not something you would do, but you're kind of, you know, it's kind of cute in a sense. So for us, this material suffering is very serious sometimes. Why is this happening to me, you know? But for Krishna, it's not, because he's fully cognizant that we're eternal. He actually knows when we're going to come back. And all. So it's not for him, it's just, okay, you know, you want to do this for a while, fine, that's okay. But he's not as such engaged in it himself. It's not like he's there playing around with the mud. Does that make sense? Okay, Hare Krishna, you're welcome. Okay, anything else? Yes, Prabhu?
Prabhu,
Hare
thank
Krishna.
You so much for the nice class.
Thank you.
Prabhu, could you describe the different kind of liberations and the difference between them, like Sahuji Mukti, Samipi Mukti?
The difference between what?
Different kind of liberations.
Different kinds of liberation. Basically,
yeah.
You have five different types of liberation. So, you have different ways of looking at it. Generally, liberation just means the cessation of suffering. So actually engaging your material senses with the material energy is a liberation. The problem just is that as soon as that connection is gone, the liberation is also gone. So I usually give the example of cake. You're eating cake, you're technically liberated. There's no suffering, you're just happy. But then the cake runs out, and then suddenly it's mortgage and the wife's nagging and stuff like that again. Next is relationships, material relationships, where you can have family relationships. There's a liberation because there's security and shelter in that. Problem is the kids grow up and someone dies and stuff like that. It doesn't last. So then there's also a liberation in engaging in dharma, in varnashram dharma. That just playing along with the rules of the material energy, being pious, that means you're getting consistently good results from your activities. That means the suffering is not coming because you're not violating the rules of the universe. However, there's always some baggage, so, and there's always mistakes going on, and it's still material, so it's still temporary, so that also goes away. Then you have what we usually call liberation, where you understand the separation between the material energy and you as a spirit soul. So when you realize that, that you're actually a spirit soul, then the material energy doesn't really bite. It's like a snake without the fangs. It may bite, but it doesn't really hurt you because you don't identify with it anymore. But that doesn't help, because it's the impersonal liberation where you're just kind of hanging there. So what now? Now what? So you got rid of the suffering. You also got rid of the pleasure, the happiness. You just kind of flatline. So then only actually Krishna consciousness is real liberation, where you're engaging in activities for Krishna. That means you're getting all the happiness you need and can actually contain, because you're making Krishna happy. Krishna's unlimited, so unlimited happiness at your disposal. You're also engaged in activities because you're performing service for him, but you're not getting any of the reactions, because it's not, you're not taking credit for anything, so the reaction is not coming. So that's why only Krishna consciousness is actually liberation. You have so many definitions of what liberation means. It just means liberation from what? From suffering, of course. But every other type of liberation than pure devotional service is temporary. Does that make sense? So Krishna consciousness, that's liberation. Does that make sense? Thank you. That's it. Oh.
Like the five types of liberation is there, like one of them is Sayuja Mukti, merging, yes, with the effulgence or Supreme Lord.
Yes.
So there are two types of Sayuja Mukti. So what are the differences between them? Like one is merging with the Supreme Lord's body, and another is merging with the effulgence.
The difference is that you're connected with different aspects of the Lord. You can also be on the same planet as the Lord, and you have this, have a spiritual, you say that have a spiritual body like the Lord, or a similar body like the Lord, and
no, like Shishupal, he merged into body, yes, of the Krishna. Kansa also, they were not merging in the Brahma effulgence. They were merging in the directly in the body of Krishna.
Yes.
So what are the differences between these two?
That if you're merged in the body of Krishna, that means you're accepting that he has a form. The effulgence, you're not accepting that he has a form, basically, right? So the Brahman realization, or the impersonal liberation, just means that you understand Krishna's form to be material. That means it's subservient to the non-form, the nirguna, which is actually, I think the term is oxymoron. It doesn't exist. It's misnomer. It doesn't exist actually. Nirguna means no qualities, but what it actually means is no material qualities. But some get it wrong and think that no, it's just no qualities. So that is the pradan, or the Brahman effulgence. When you merge into that, seemingly there are no qualities, but all the qualities are there. They're just not manifest separately, and you are not manifest separately. You just merge into it. We use the example of the green bird and the green tree. There's still a tree, there's still a bird, but you can't distinguish. So that's one thing. But merging into the body of the Lord is that there is a body, you know. I mean, you acknowledge that there is a form, but you're just becoming one with it. So both of them basically means that you want to become the Supreme, become one with the Supreme rather than serving the Supreme. But there's a slight difference in the like philosophical approach to it. Both of them are temporary and not approved.
Those who merge into Brahma effulgence, they come back to material world again.
Yeah.
And they again, like whatever, they try to again.
They come down with the rains. Yeah. And.
But those who merge into body of Krishna, they also separate existence after like some period of time, or just.
I didn't catch that. What did you say? The last.
Those who merge into body of Krishna.
Yes.
They also get separate existence after certain duration of time, or just they are there in the body.
That's a good question. I would suspect they would have to take a material form again, because they are still not they're still not in pure devotional service, so that means they have an idea of themselves being important, and that's the karana sharira. So somehow at some point they would have to take a material body. That's the best I can do. So, is that okay? Does anyone else have a comment on this? You can you give the mic?
I followed a seminar on Super Soul Paramatma by Sachinanda Swami, and it was interesting because in fact he was pointing that it's helpful for devotees to meditate on this form of Super Soul. He's always with us, and also for devotees they said it's Krishna, so especially he's always with us, you know, we can hear him. So would that be helpful?
If it is helpful for devotees to meditate on the Super Soul, yes, as a part of sadhana bhakti, it can be helpful, but not as a sadhana itself. That's the distinguishing point, that it can be a secondary aspect, like cooking for Krishna, like doing kirtan for Krishna, like giving class or reading Bhagavatam, is good as a part of devotional service. If it becomes a sadhana in itself, then it's not going to be approved because it won't actually take you out. So if we're chanting, it can be at some point or at points it could be beneficial to meditate on the Super Soul within the heart of us, just to acknowledge that we're not alone in this and the Super Soul is always with us. But still, it's a part of devotional service. That's what Vedanta is the complete understanding of reality. So Patanjali's yoga system is a part of Vedanta. Some take it as the all-in-all, which is not bona fide, which is not recommended. And this is where you end up with what we could call Super Soul realization, the Astanga yoga system. You're controlling all the elements of your body, and then you put the Super Soul and stuff like that. And the story goes that it doesn't work, because in the end you're going to get mystic cities and you're going to feel very qualified, and then you're going to fall down again because you think that I'm doing this. You know, that's the problem. So as an aspect of devotional service, it works because we understand that I'm not actually the doer. But as a process in itself, it's not recommended. Does that make sense? Okay, thank you. Mataji?
So much for class. Just the topic of Super Soul, I've been having this question for a long time. I've been having this question for a long time because I heard that as soon as we try to surrender to Krishna, actually in our heart is not not Super Soul, but it's Krishna himself. Right? So, but we don't have relationship with Krishna yet, but he's still in our heart. So I just was wondering how does the relationship.
Yeah, I mean, Krishna always reciprocates how, you know, as you surrender, I reward you accordingly. So if we surrender to the rules of Krishna, he will act like Super Soul. But if we surrender to Krishna as a person, he will act like a person. It's the same Krishna. There is only one Krishna. But how we deal with him, that's how he deals with us. So it's the same with anything. If you go into a shop and you don't look at the shop owner, you just throw the money, he's not going to do anything to you. He's just going to take the money, give you the thing, and then whatever. But if you come in and say, how are you doing? A nice shop. I like the countertop. It's really nice and stuff like that. He'll be dealing with you personally. So Krishna likes to deal with us personally. That's the only thing he really gets a kick out of. But if we don't do that, then he's not going to reciprocate like that. So if we take one step, he takes 10. If we look at the Super Soul in our heart, or try to look for it, and see a person there, then he's going to reciprocate as a person. So that's how it works. Yeah, thank you, Hare Krishna. Okay. Rantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaura Premanande.